So let's bring in our super friend of the show on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He is Brian Anderson. Hello, BA. How are you?
What's up, buddy?
I'm good, fellas. How are you?
I'm good. So were you happy the Dodgers won, or were you rooting for the Yankees? Were you rooting for more games? What are you thinking?
Well, I'll tell you what. When it got down for the Dodgers to have the opportunity to sweep them, I was like, you know what? Sweep them. You know, being in the same division as the Yankees and, you know, growing up in Northeast Ohio, a Cleveland Indian fan, and I can remember my dad at a very young age showing me his I hate the Yankee hanky, all of that. You just learn to not like the Yankees. And so being in the same division with them, it got to that point, and I'm like, you know what, sweep them. Just be done with it. I always root for more baseball, but I wanted them to be swept. Once they weren't, then I'm like, I can take more baseball. And so that's why the other night, watching game five, I was kind of hoping that they would get it back to L.A. for a game six, hoping, obviously, not that I'm any big fan of the team, hoping that the Dodgers would ultimately prevail. But at that point, wanted to see a little bit more baseball. But I'll tell you what, what I saw in game five, I'll tell you, I think last season was my 32nd season in Major League Baseball in some capacity. You know, player, you know, did the coaching thing for a couple of years, and then obviously I'm in the broadcast booth now. And I'm going to tell you what, I have never seen a bigger meltdown in a bigger spot than I saw the other night. I could not believe what I was watching. I'm not a gambler. I don't do that thing, and I know that, you know, you can have, you know, in-game and live gambling. Can you imagine what the odds were with Gerrit Cole at home, 5-run lead, dealing through four hitless innings, what the odds would be that, you know, for the Dodgers to come back and win that game?
Insane.
And it absolutely insane. And the comedy of errors and the sloppy play in that fifth inning, I've just never seen anything like it in a spot like that, where the game was firmly in control. You know, Aaron Judge drops a fly ball. I mean, a fly ball. You know, you can call it a line drive. It wasn't a line drive. It was a humpback liner, if anything. But he drops one of the most routine plays. You know, your 10U kid is going to make that play. And that happens. The next play, the ground ball, and Volpe makes the right play going to third. Bad throw. Chisholm can't come up with it. And then all of a sudden, Cole goes to work. Punch out in the tough part of that lineup. Okay, he's got a chance now to get out of this. And Mookie Betts hits that dribbler to Rizzo. And if Gerrit Cole does his job and covers first, like you've been taught to do since you were 5 years old, that's it. It's still 5-0 lead. That game is over. And he doesn't cover first. And then you get the base hit by Freeman. It's 5-3, a ball off the wall, misplayed off the wall, tie game. And I think what probably everybody thought, once the Dodgers got back to even, you're like, somehow, some way, they're winning this game. But I just could not believe what I saw. I just couldn't believe it. Yeah, I was telling people, I'm like, you know, in spring training, part of your conditioning, especially the first couple of weeks, is, you know, a group of four or five pitchers, you know, you'll be on a field and you will go through your delivery and there's a ground ball to the right side and you go cover first. Hard hit ball, soft hit ball, doesn't matter. You go cover first. And you do that for 20 minutes. And that's part of your conditioning. But it instinctually teaches you that when you throw a pitch, a ground ball to the right side, you go. And you don't stop until you either A, receive the throw and make the play at first base, or the infielder calls you off, and then you pull up and you let him take it. And Gerrit Cole did neither. He started that way. He was in perfect position to be able to cover the bag and beat Mookie Betts, but he pulls up and points at Rizzo, and Rizzo had yet to field the ball. And, boy, when that happened, that was a huge mistake, obviously, on Gerrit Cole's part. Rizzo did not have time to get to the bag because Betts was busting it up the line and that ball was not hit that hard. So he had no chance to make the play. And then all of a sudden it came absolutely apart after that. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. That was some kind of meltdown. And that's something that those poor players, and maybe not even poor players, those players are going to have to live with for the rest of their career. Maybe you get back there, maybe you don't. But that is something that will haunt them forever, and especially Garrett Cole, you know, who holds himself to a high standard. He is sitting thinking right now, if I cover the bag like I've been taught to do, and it's just something that's instinctual. It's not even something that you think about. You react, you go cover the bag until you're called off. If I do that, they win that game. It's still a 5-0 game through five innings, and there's no chance the Dodgers are going to mount something after that, or very little. So that was something like I've never seen. I couldn't believe it.
I couldn't either. That whole inning blew me away. I mean, the other thing that blew me away with the series, have you seen all the stuff that's come out afterwards of how many injuries Freddie Freeman was dealing with? I mean, we're talking cracked ribs, we're talking the ankle. I think he was dealing with some kind of hamstring thing on top of it. Like, he's starting to sound like a hockey player, B.A.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you saw him, you know, in the previous series. You know, thank goodness they, you know, clinched as quickly as they did it. He had a little bit of time to you know, get some sort of rest. But yeah, he had a hard time, you know, a base hit, and he's barely getting to first base because of that ankle. Didn't even know about the ribs, but that's got to be super painful to even just swing the bat. But that was – and what a performance. Not only did he play through all that, but at one point, homering in 6 consecutive World Series games, are you kidding me? And dramatic homers. You know, the granny to walk it off. And then how about the homers in the first inning, you know, the 2-run homers in the first inning to set the tone? I mean, it just an incredible series. The easiest MVP, I think, that's probably been given out, you know, in the World Series in a long time. I mean, he was a man on a mission. What a cool story, and what a great performance.
All right, B.A., I've got a couple questions I want to ask you, because we were talking about, you know, just kind of looking back at the last 2 seasons and all the rule changes that have happened to this game. And because I thought the playoffs were outstanding this year, and I thought they were great. I love the fact that you don't have the phantom runner to start extra innings too. I'd rather see the game played the way it should be played without putting a fantasy runner out on second base to try to speed up things. So before we go back and look at some of the things that they've done, there's a lot of talk right now about making starting pitching go 6 innings or 90 to 100 pitches. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Well, I just don't know how you legislate that. I mean, I know that you just said what you can do, but there's got to be an effectiveness factor. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just say, well, he's got to go 6. Well, what if he's getting hammered in the second or third? You got to be able to get him out of there at 2 1/3 innings and 65 pitches because he's given up 6 runs. You know, you can't be held to those numbers. So I don't even know how you do anything like that.
Because the next thing after that is, well, if you're up by 5 runs after the 7th, it's mercy rule, right?
Okay, I mean, yes,
something stupid like that.
Travel ball,
yes,
travel ball stuff. This is Major League Baseball. I'm sorry, Major League Baseball. By the way, I don't mind the fantasy runner in the regular season, because the way these bullpens are built now, these games would last forever, and you would tear up your staff for good. I love it in the postseason because it's different.
Right.
But in the regular season, I don't mind that guy being out there because there's instant action. There's something that's going to happen, and it's going to happen relatively quickly. But yeah, to your point, I love the fact that they go back to, you know, the old rules in the regular, you know, in the postseason.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the playoffs. But in the regular season, I don't mind that guy running out there at all, because if not, you'd be playing 15, 16, 17 innings all the time.
I've gotten used to the zombie runner, but I still don't love it, B.A. It just seems wrong that it's like, all right, let's just put somebody out there for no reason. Let's hurry this thing up. Come on, we got to give the field up so that the next Little League team can take over.
Yeah, right.
That's my problem. Like, I get it, and we don't want to blow out these bullpens, and we want these games to end before midnight. Like, I understand it and all those things, but it just feels very like, you know, hang on, the U-12 softball team is coming, and we got to finish this thing.
Yeah, no, I both sides of the argument, I'm fine with. You know, the people that loathe it, I get it. The people that don't mind it or like it, I get that too, because there's instant action. There's just too much of the game has gotten to the 3 outcomes. And there is so much because of the way that they're able to take these pitchers and, you know, put them in a pitch lab, pitch shaping, velocity, all of this stuff. I mean, what was the average this year for Major League Baseball? 240 something, 240 maybe, you know, I mean, so just nothing happens. And with these strong bullpens, and most teams that have been able to put together a pretty sturdy bullpen for the most part, you get to a tie game through nine, and you're going to start going into your high leverage guys. You're going to sit there all night. There will be nothing happen. It'll be three up, three down, two punch outs, and a pop. I mean, nothing will happen.
Throw a double play in there.
Yeah, that too. I mean, listen, but again, I understand people that don't like that because that's not how baseball has played for 150 years. Mm. I get that too. But like I said, I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. It would bother me in the postseason for sure because that's a different animal. But regular season, I'm kind of on the fence. If they go back to the old way, fine. If they keep the ghost runner, I'm not losing sleep.
All right, league average splits this year, BA, 243 batting average, 312 on base, 399 slugging.
Yeah, that's a whole lot of nothing.
That's a lot. I'll give it to you.
For the league average at 243, 312, those guys 20, 25 years ago are probably not even going to be on the team. And if they are, you're going to be a utility player that gets very little playing time. And that's the average of the entire league. That's taking everybody into account. You are a bench player, is what those numbers say.
Mm. Let me go through it. I'm just looking back at the last 2 years, and I don't want to spend a ton of time, but I want your perspective. And, you know, because we've had time to let all this stuff settle in, and I think we forget about it now. It's just become part of the game, and everyone is good with it. So let me go through some of the changes that we've looked through over the last 2 years. Pitch clock, good, bad, indifferent, needs to be tweaked. What do you think?
I think it's awesome.
Okay.
It is absolutely awesome. It puts a pace back into the game, you know, and nobody's really crying about it anymore. As far as the pitchers go, they haven't even used, you know, the time that they've been given. You know, what is it? You know, 18 seconds with nobody on, or 15 and then 18. Yeah, 15 seconds with nobody on, 18 seconds with a runner on base, and they're still on average, you know, delivering that pitch with 7-8 seconds left on the clock. So they're not even using the time that they were given. So that tells me it's not bothering the pitchers one iota. And what it does is it puts action back in the game. It puts a pace back in the game. It moves. A pitch. We've had pitchers here in Tampa that with nobody on base were taking 35 seconds in between pitches. I mean, a pitch and then 35 seconds. Just stare at your watch for a 35-second count before the next pitch comes. I mean, that is just puts you to sleep stuff.
Yeah, I can imagine Rafael Betancourt is probably like pull every hair out of his head at this point, right? I'd hate to watch a game with him right now.
You're right. And all of these guys, listen, there were a lot of big leaguers who took their good old time. And when they put the pitch clock in, they belly ached about it. They didn't like it very much. But guess what? They all were able to make the adjustment and still be effective.
It
moves things along. I absolutely that might be the best thing that they've done.
I'll tell you the other thing is the hitter engagement part of it, like that they've got to be engaged with the pitcher with what is it 8 seconds?
Yeah.
I love that.
Be at the ready. You know, and you get one timeout, and so you've seen how hitters have gotten to be very strategic on how and when they take their timeout because they know they only get one. This can't be the constant call and time. Stepping out again, a lot of nothing happening. You get one, use it wisely.
Bigger bags. Yes, no, don't even notice.
At this point, don't even notice.
I
know that definitely has helped the running game, you know, because with the 15 by 15 bags, what it used to be, now they're 18 by 18. So from home to first, that's 3 inches closer. But when you start looking at from second or first to second and second to third, it's 4.5 inches closer. So that has definitely spiked up the running game as teams get more athletic and realize with the pitcher being limited to the disengagements and the bigger bags, that was going to, you know, that was going to encourage the running game. And that's what we've seen. Again, more action. You know, trying to find teams opportunities to score different ways because you just can't sit back for the most part and slug anymore. The pitching has become very difficult for these hitters for a lot of different reasons. And so you've got to be able to manufacture runs, to find different ways to score. And so that has helped out tremendously. But at this point, you know, I don't notice it. I mean, you know it's there, but it's just become part of the fabric of the game right now.
All right, so two other I want to just get to real quick. The mandatory three batters, like in the playoffs, it felt like You know, because the Guardians ran into that at one point. You're like, I think they need to take him out. Oh, no, he's got to face two more batters. You know what I like about the mandatory three batters? It makes the managers manage, right?
Ah, thank you. That was just going to say, it puts a huge emphasis on the manager. Do you want to make that move or don't you? I know that you want that pitcher out in the pen on this particular hitter that's coming up. But if it doesn't work out, you're stuck with him for the next two, and they could start pinching. I mean, you have to manage. You have to think about all of the scenarios, not just that one-on-one matchup. And if it doesn't go your way, we go to the next guy. Can't do that.
I so, love it. Yeah, I thought I it made that too. And I think it makes the playoffs even more intense. All right, last one I'm going to ask you about is shift. Defensive
it's
shift.
Fine. No, you know what? It's fine because there used to be, when they first came up with that rule, there was supposed to be a dead area at second base, the point of second base facing center field. It was supposed to be kind of a V of an area that you could not be in. You know, you couldn't be almost directly behind second base. And even Buck Showalter talked about, well, then why don't we chalk that? Why don't we chalk that area, and that's the area that these middle infielders cannot be in? They have not enforced that. You know, when I'm sitting up in my perch, you know, high behind home plate, you're looking at that shortstop. When they want to shift against the left-handed hitter, he is almost right behind second base. Mm-hmm. He's in that area that was supposed to be a dead area. So they're still able to shift. They're just not able to take the second baseman and put him in short right field.
Yeah, it's no longer the extreme.
You have to have your feet on the dirt. So they still have been able to shift and take hits away, especially up the middle. But I love that. I love the fact that you just can't have that second baseman out in shallow right. You know, out in the grass. I love the fact that they at least keep their heels on the dirt.
Too softball-y for me. All right, BA, have a great weekend. I hope you got a lot of candy last night. Take care, my friend.
We didn't even get to Jameis, boys.
I know. We just ran out of time. You want to do another segment with us?
You know what? No. Here's what we'll do. We'll talk about him next week when he lights up the Chargers.
All right, I love it. And I also want to know where the Rays are playing next week. Will you tell me? Are they going to be able to play at home?
Hey, I know as much as you do. I do know this. That right now they're assessing the damage at the Trop. What I didn't realize is that building, all of the electronics in the building are not weatherproof where they are in every outdoor stadium. So, you know, in every outdoor stadium, I'm thinking, well, the Jumbotron in Cleveland is out in the rain and the elements. Yes, but all of the electronics at Tropicana Field, the Jumbotron, everything was built for indoors. It was not built to withstand. So, everything inside was ruined. Everything. Because it wasn't built to withstand water. Here's the other thing that I learned. Because it was a fixed building and a fixed facility, it had zero drainage. So everything that all the rain, everything that came into the Trop after the roof came off, didn't drain.
So it'd be like a basketball arena. Right, if the roof came off a basketball, All right,
no drainage. What? So they're supposed to have that damage assessment done early November. That's when I think that you'll start to figure out, can they fix it? Will they fix it? When will it be done? And what are the plans starting to come into play?
All right, hold these thoughts for next week.
Everything done by Christmas.
All right, BA, we love you. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, man.
You're the man.
See you, boys.
Peace.
See you, brother.
Brian Anderson on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hody 2020 now.